Hi, this is Bill at KosiabaFitness.com. Thanks for taking the time to check out this interview. This is the first in a series of recorded interviews that I'm going to present featuring authorities, experts, and some celebrities in the sports, fitness, wellness, and nutrition industries. If you've got a specific guest you'd like to hear from, or a specific topic you'd like covered, get in touch with me directly at bill@kosiabafitness.com, and I'll see what I can do. Now on to today's interview. Our guest today has her master's degree in clinical nutrition from Florida International University. She's a registered dietitian in the state of Florida. She has a list of credentials longer than my arm, both in the nutrition industry as well as a world-class athlete. So now,
it is my great pleasure and my honor to introduce Arlene Semeco. Say hello, Arlene.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me, Bill.
It is my pleasure. Now, could you, even though I pretty much gave the encapsulated version there, can you tell us a little about your background and how and why you became a nutritionist?
Well, everything started when I started my career with swimming. Back in, 20 years ago, it's been a long journey for me, just in the sense of figuring out, you know, what I wanted to do for a career. And I felt, once I started with my competitive swimming, I felt that part of the preparation was, you know, based on what I used to, and I felt that I needed to learn more about it. So in that whole transition, I came to the States and I went to the University of Alabama for college swimming. And I started my journey, my academic career there. And I fell in love with nutrition. I took Nutrition 101 and I said, this is it. This is what I need, not only for myself and my health, but also for my swimming. So I went straight to it. I got my bachelor's degree from the University of Alabama. And in 2007, I graduated from there, and I moved down here to South Florida to prepare myself for Beijing Olympics in 2008. And right after that, I started my master's degree in FIU, Miami. And not very far after that, I did my registration for the registered dietitian exam, and I became a registered dietitian, and also I'm certified sports nutritionist by the International Society of Sports Nutrition. So in the whole deal, I've been in three Olympics, like you said, 2004, 2008, 2012. And I am a gold medalist in Pan American Games 2007. I've been in numerous competitions internationally and nationally here in the state. And, yeah, I've just been in, you know, the sports nutrition field for a couple of years now. And I've been able to incorporate everything I learned with my swimming. And it just has made a huge difference for me. So, after that, I started working in Health South. It's a rehab hospital, and I had the pleasure to work with different population, mainly elderly, which is what we mainly get. But we have the whole spectrum from, 30-year-old and above. I work with diabetic patients, drug patients, any sort of orthopedic injury, anything that they have. And these people, unfortunately, they don't suffer just for one condition. They have a history of, cardiovascular disease or, it's a long, there's some patients that are like, long list of conditions, so you have to incorporate what you know and try to address every single condition and make them suitable for, a diet that is suitable for them. So
that's got to be difficult in itself, because things that would be positive for one condition could be contraindicated for another.
Correct, correct. So it's very challenging, and I've been, I had the pleasure to work with a couple of really, really good dietitians, and sometimes we find ourselves trying, debating what to do with the patients, because, like you said, when something works for one condition, it could be contraindicated for the other, so we need to find a good balance for them. So,
how did you get from Venezuela to the University of Alabama? I would think if I was going to Alabama, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Auburn a more sports-powerful school, a more sports-oriented school?
Auburn is a really good school, sports. However, I actually got recruited by them too. But I decided University of Alabama for the coaching staff at that moment, at that point of time. The coaching staff was, very eager for me to go there, and they offered me, a full scholarship. So I had a full ride all 4 years, and it made a huge difference for me in the decision-making process. And I just had a great experience in the University of Alabama. I don't regret it, one single bit going there. So yeah, it's a little bit of a change, going from Venezuela to Alabama, but I enjoy every single minute of it. So, kind of weird, and now I'm a Bama fan at heart, and I don't like Auburn, so.
Now, it just struck me as extremely funny, because my brother lives in Alabama, and he and I have an understanding. If we want to see each other, he's either coming down here or we're going somewhere else, because I don't know about Alabama. It's just way too quiet and too slow for me.
Yeah, it's a different pace. Definitely, I felt a difference when I came down to South Florida. I felt like I was back at home with all the melting pot of cultures that are here. But it was a big difference for me from Alabama. But yeah, it's a different culture, environment, pace of living. It's very quiet. So yeah.
No, if it's a culture shock for me going from Florida to Alabama, I can imagine what it was like going from Venezuela to Alabama. Okay, I get the feeling you and I can talk for a very long time, so we need to get to the point. We need to get to the stuff that people want to hear about. You have all the questions that I forwarded you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's address the issues of the one lady, Pat Lang, who is in my regular exercise class, who is diabetic, and she had a couple questions for you, and one of them is related to fasting. I believe, do you have them in front of you? Don't worry about it. The question was, I remember, if you had it in front of you, you could read it, it would sound better. I think her question was,
I have it here. Let me see.
I believe the question was whether she should do her insulin and eat before or after the morning exercise class. Because I had advised the class that I'd like them to exercise fasted, but hadn't really taken the diabetic factor into consideration, and I didn't have
right.
the answer. So, fasting, yes or no for a diabetic?
No. I would like to point that out. It's actually a myth to go to, work out fasting. Your body kind of assimilates, yes, you burn more fat, and that's a true statement. However, your body kind of gets into this starvation mode where they just want to grab onto everything they have. And for diabetics, it's definitely a no-no, getting to that point where you are, fasting for a couple hours, because I'm assuming this is a workout in the morning, so you're already fasting for at least 8 hours. And you don't want to get your blood sugar too low and get to the fat-burning zone, because what your body is doing is burning all that fat and converting it into ketones, and then that any type of problem or the condition to develop diabetic ketone levels can rise really fast and it can lead to diabetic coma. So I will completely recommend having a little snack before practice or before the workout and take the insulin before the workout. You're not only going to burn your glucose, you're also going to burn your fat, and you're going to not have that drop into, you know, low blood sugars during the workout. That it could definitely happen. But you never know how diabetic could be. You know, they can either sustain a really good level of glucose and have a good level of glucose during the workout, or it can drop really fast. So you don't want to have that risk going on into your workout.
Okay, I just changed phones because you sound really bad on that particular one. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. You sound better. Now, before we go on to her next question, I want to just ask, because there was another young lady in the class who told me she was hypoglycemic. How would we address that, as in fast or not to fast before an early morning workout?
Hypo or hyper?
Hyper.
Hyper, okay. Well, you can probably get away with going to workout without having a little bit of snack, but I still will recommend to just have, even if it's a little bar, a granola bar or something like that, that will hold you through the workout. You definitely don't want to get, you want to check your blood sugar levels before your workout, before you head to the gym, and see where you are. If your levels are okay and you can sustain a little bit of food, then go for it. If you think that you can, you know, go through the workout and you think that your blood sugar won't drop, then do that. But I really recommend to have a little bit of higher blood sugar level going to the workout than just being, borderline low and then have the risk of dropping too much during the workout.
Okay. Now let's go back to Pat's other question. She talks about walking distances or going on long bike rides, and what's going to be an appropriate post-workout beverage recovery, because, she drinks a soda, and that's going to throw back all the calories she just burned.
Okay, well, she actually was talking about a drink before the long exercises. Before the long exercises, I recommend, I don't know if you ever heard of this protocol by Targo. Have you ever heard of that one?
Say it again.
By Targo.
No, I don't know that one. Who makes it?
It's actually made by Generate. They're based in California, and I can definitely send you a link of the product so you can post it on your website. It's a really good product. It's a carbohydrate molecule that is going to be absorbed in your body really fast. And your stomach only sits there for like maybe 10 minutes. But it doesn't give you the sugar spike that any, sugary beverage or post-workout, bar or anything like that will give you. This is going to give you a steady sugar level energy that is going to carry you throughout the workout. This is a revolutionary thing, and I'm actually working with them closely because we want to incorporate it in the hospital setting too for diabetics. So I really highly recommend checking this workout product, and you can have it, before or during the actual walk. She said that she goes, usually does this walk for an hour or even more at times. I will definitely carry it with you in a little bit, in a container, in a bottle, and you can get throughout the workout. So your levels, your sugar levels are going to go steady throughout the entire workout, and you're not going to get all, this sugar empty calories back into you, which is going to completely defeat the purpose of the workout.
Okay, excellent. Yep. Let's see, I think that's everything she wanted. So let's jump to the question of omegas, the other question from Lisa. I don't know what your knowledge is with retinitis pigmentosa, but let's talk about omega-3s, because they seem to be the cure-all right now for everything. They're a fat burner, they're a cholesterol lowerer, you name it. I'm waiting for someone to say they grow hair.
Well, definitely omega-3s is a good supplement to have for anything. You know, disease prevention as well as treating of certain diseases and cardiovascular disease. And like you said, yeah, it's like the thing to do now. But it really is a good thing for you. It's good to have it incorporated in your diet from, you know, very little. Sometimes I recommend it to my swimmers. They're like teenagers. For the RP patients, I will definitely recommend at least 2.5 grams a day of omega-3. And, you know, the omega-3s, if you see the label, will be broken down to EPA and DHA. And between both of them, you definitely want to give 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day.
Of each.
So, of each. No, of together. Both of
okay. Them. I thought you said 2.5 grams before. I'm sorry.
2.5 grams of omega-3 total.
Okay.
Omega-3. And then 500 milligrams to 1,000 milligrams of EPA plus DHA together.
Okay.
So let's say you eat a can of tuna, that will be a 500 milligrams of omega-3 right there. So you can complement your supplements with food, fortified, you know, omega-3 foods are eggs, margarine, milk, juice, yogurt. There's some certain products that are really good sources of omega-3, like Brussels sprouts, kale, spinach. They also, like you know, everybody knows the oils that are good for you, the canola oil, the olive oil, flaxseed, walnut oil. And, you know, some of them, the grains or nuts that people know they're good. You know, peanut butter is good for you in the sense they have good omega-3, flaxseed, pumpkin seeds, and then the grains, you know, oatmeal, and the good grains are good for omega-3 too. There are some of them that are actually fortified with more omega-3 that they actually naturally come with. So, yeah, I definitely recommend omega-3 for RP patients. And, you know, if that comes with, and she said that she eats walnuts or salmon and other omega-3 foods, but, you know, you definitely want to complement it also with supplements.
So at least 2 grams a day, plus correct, whatever you eat.
Correct.
Okay, I think she also asked you something about calcium.
Yeah, she said, do you recommend calcium supplements? I will definitely recommend calcium supplements for a female or male, especially above, you know, 50, 60 year old and above. 1,000 milligrams of a day minimum with vitamin D. It will be a great supplement to have incorporated in your diet, for sure.
Okay, I know years ago they used to say you had to have a balanced ratio, I think, magnesium to your calcium, like 500 magnesium to every 1,000 calcium. Is that still the school of thought with keeping your minerals balanced?
Yeah, definitely you want to add magnesium. I don't really, you know, maybe, yeah, those supplements that have, you know, the vitamin D and the magnesium and the calcium all together is definitely something that you can consider. They usually have, like, your ratio.
Okay. So is it beneficial to have the magnesium, or does it not really matter all that much?
It does matter, and, yeah, it is beneficial, and it definitely helps you also with cardiovascular disease, you know, cardiovascular prevention. And the arteries, you know, relaxation. It definitely is a really good product to have. I wouldn't abuse it, but it definitely is something that you can also have, you know, incorporated, and you can also get it from some food. So.
Okay, I'm going to throw a question at you that honestly just came into my mind, and it may be totally out of your realm of expertise, but we're talking about magnesium. Lately, I've seen magnesium oil to be used in a topical form advertised a lot on some of the real hardcore fitness websites. Do you have any thoughts on using magnesium as a topical?
No. I really haven't even heard of that, but I will think that it will be something that you can have for muscle relaxation.
That's exactly what they're promoting it for, recuperation, recovery, muscle soreness, tendon and ligament tendon soreness.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And if I trust the source and I trust the brand, I will definitely give it a try.
Okay.
It does help with relaxation, so.
Okay, then that makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Okay, I think we have some questions from a gentleman in Canada named Ron about acid reflux and improving alkalinity in his diet.
Yes. He asked, let me see, he said that he switched from an acid to a more alkaline diet, and he's been eating less white potatoes and pasta, and he would like to know what to replace those food items with. For the alkaline diet, I will definitely go for more vegetables. Any sorts of vegetables and fruits and are good for an alkaline diet. And legumes, oats, and brown rice are excellent sources of carbohydrates for an alkaline diet. So he can probably, you know, substitute these white potatoes and pasta for legumes, oats, and brown rice.
Well, I'd just be eliminating the white potatoes and pasta because I don't really think we need all that starch in our diet. But if he has to have it, he's got to have something.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. He had a few other things on there. I think something about water.
He wanted to see because he's been adding some slices of lemon and lime or chlorophyll to his water. And he would like to know if anything else to add flavor to the water. I don't know if you've seen so many people actually have been starting, you know, that trend where they don't drink water, plain water, they need to have some flavor. I will definitely recommend for an alkaline diet, watermelon, apples, cherries. You can definitely cut those and put them in your water. They're going to help with the alkaline diet and it also gives you some flavor to the water.
Okay. I think he asks about acid turning into alkaline. Now, citrus fruits, are they appropriate for his diet?
They are actually, the alkaline foods should really be called alkaline forming foods because they actually are considered alkaline forming in your body. When, you know, if foods form alkaline in the body, that's when you're considering, that's what we call alkaline foods. So, there's some citrus, like lemon and lime and oranges that by nature are acidic, but when they're being, you know, your body metabolizes them, they become alkaline. So that's normal. Like he said, that he drinks orange juice, it goes in acidic and it comes out alkaline because when he tests his urine, it will be alkaline after you drink any citrus like orange or lime or lemon, because your body metabolizes it and it becomes alkaline in your body. So it is kind of weird to understand, but your body kind of contrarias the acidity of the food and it makes it alkaline. So it actually forms alkaline in your body.
Okay. I never knew that. All right. I'm going to jump in a whole different direction now because I think that covers all the questions that we had. And just based on some of what you've said so far, I'm very curious your thoughts on the paleo diet / I think they call it the ancestral diet as well, and intermittent fasting in general with, you know, that whole concept of that way of eating, the one meal a day and the hunter-gatherer thing.
Yeah, the intermittent fasting is kind of a tricky thing to do because if you are, you know, a health conscious patient or, you know, person and want to have a good lean body mass, want to be lean, want to have a good body mass in your body to support metabolism and support good health, you definitely don't want to do the intermittent fasting. What it does is it really completely consumes all the glucose that you have in your body and your body starts metabolizing the protein in your muscles, which is something that you don't want to have when you're kind of building your body mass and or maintaining your body mass. And yeah, if you want to be a skinny little thin, you can definitely go for the intermittent fast, and you probably will have some success with that. But if you want to have, especially for diabetic patients, you don't want to be going to, you know, a couple of days, you know, under 1,000 calories a day, and you have the risk drop, you know, to have your blood sugar levels drop to dangerous zones. So I will not recommend intermittent fasting for diabetic patients or anybody that wants to support a good lean body mass and a good metabolism. But I will recommend it to somebody that wants to be super skinny and just don't care about lean body mass, or, you know, they don't have any problems with diabetes, and they just want to have, you know, very lean body. So, it's tricky because there's some people that are very pro the intermittent fasting, and they think that even when you're trying to maintain a good body mass, or lean body mass, you can still get away with it. But I will not recommend it whatsoever if that's the goal that you're looking for. And I'm assuming your clients are really, into, you know, building lean body mass, maintaining a good blood sugar. So I will not recommend that to your clients.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the paleo diet in general, which to me pretty much looks a whole lot like Atkins with a few twists?
Yeah. It's funny that you're mentioning this because now, I'm actually invited to a paleo challenge this weekend. It's a good thing to do in the sense of having, you know, I'm a very good believer of a balanced diet. However, I also am a big believer in not processed foods and sugary things. So this paleo diet kind of goes with that. I wouldn't make it completely strict where you're not going to have any, you know, carbohydrates or anything like that or any dairy. I will go a little more to the balance part. You want to have good carbohydrates. You want to keep it, you know, whole grain, and you want to have good sources of carbohydrates are, you know, fruits and vegetables. So you want to do that, but you don't want to cut completely, you know, some sorts of protein like the dairy. If you're, you know, if you don't have any problem with dairy and you can eat it, then I will recommend to have some sorts of yogurt or, you know, milk with your diet. But yeah, I mean, the paleo diet is a really clean diet in the sense that you're not going to put any refined sugar or salt or refined vegetable oils in your body, which is a good thing. But at the same time, there are a lot of limitations. You're limiting yourself with a lot of, nutrients that you can probably have for certain things that paleo diet don't recommend. So it depends on how intense you are in the whole deal. I mean, you can have some protein with eggs, nuts, and seeds, but you definitely want to have, if you can, like I said, if you're not intolerant to dairy, you can probably have good sources of protein there. And you definitely wouldn't be able to do that with a paleo diet.
Okay. I think the last thing I want to hit you with is one of the things that was in the questions I sent you, rheumatoid arthritis, and anything nutritionally one can do, foods that they should avoid that cause inflammation, or foods that can be added to the diet to help reduce inflammation.
Okay, foods to avoid. I will definitely avoid any fried or processed foods. They also have the sugar and refined carbs I will definitely stay away from. If you have very bad rheumatoid arthritis, I will stay away from dairy. And you can substitute these products with, you know, vegetable-based protein, which is spinach, beans, lentils, quinoa, nuts, tofu. That definitely can give you a little bit more protein. And there is this one thing that people don't realize is grill and fried foods have what is called advanced glycation end products, which are inflammation causing chemicals in your body. So you definitely want to stay away from those blackened, you know, chickens or, you know, if you're going to have any fried foods, you definitely want to stay away from those and substitute it with good oils. So fruits that reduce, actually help inflammation will be like the good oils, like the olive oil. And omega-3, you know, fish like salmon, tuna, nuts like walnuts and almonds and sunflower seeds. You want to stay, you know, within the vegetables and the fruits like pineapple, apples, berries. Garlic's a good vegetable to have for inflammation, to help inflammation. And some herbs like basil and parsley are really good for it.
I believe I've heard that onion has the same similar effect like garlic would.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Well, we're doing good. We use lots of onions and garlic here, but you killed me when you said no grilled food.
Yeah, grill. You don't want to overdo the grill, is what I mean. When it starts becoming that black cover in your meat, you want to stay away from that. You want to keep it a little bit more, you know, less black.
Mm-hmm.
When it starts becoming black is when you start, you know, creating those chemicals that you don't want in your body.
Okay. Naturally, that's just how I like my meat, nice and a little bit charred on the outside. Okay, well, I've done enough other things wrong over the years, so I think that covers everything I wanted to know and everything that people asked us. Is there anything that you can think of we've left out?
I will definitely recommend for diabetic patients to keep, you know, your blood sugar control. I've seen so many patients at the hospital that have a history of not compliance with their diet or blood sugar monitoring. It's so important, and people don't realize it's just, you know, they think that just popping a pill or just injecting yourself with insulin, you're getting everything and you're controlling your diabetes. You have to be on top of it. Day in and day out, and you actually can have, you know, a complete healthy lifestyle and have a good life expectancy if you have a good control of it. Also, getting, you know, your workouts, and I'm really, really happy that you're doing all this still because it brings awareness to the diabetic population and also, you know, keeping them healthy, keeping them active, lowering the body fat, which is a big concern and a big risk for diabetic people like that are prone to diabetes to develop. I definitely would recommend, you know, a daily workout and keep, you know, your eye on your blood sugar over time. So I congratulate you for what you're doing, and I said this is a huge help for this population.
Well, that's very kind of you to say, and I hope it helps somebody, and I want to thank you for taking the time, even though we had a few false starts in trying to get this together, and I, as I said, would like to talk to you in the future about how you incorporate strength training in your swimming, and we're going to call it a day, and thank you everybody for listening.